Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I think people are rightly excited by Dameon Pierce after preseason week one. It was my biggest overreaction watching the game last week. I thought it was very clear he should be the day one running back. But I was, as I was
really
looking for topics.
Really very clear?
Oh, yeah.
Even with a different running back room than a year ago?
I am intrigued by Marlon Mack, and I don't believe in the one running back. Like, I don't believe in a bell cow running back as a good system. So I think Marlon Mack should see the field. I am going to remain skeptical of guys, especially running backs, but any guys recovering from Achilles injuries until I see more of it. Because right now, all we're working off of is, a 5 or 6 week stint with Cam Akers. And don't get me wrong, he was good in that stint. But I need to see more before I'm willing to totally buy in. Like, for the most part, an Achilles injury for a running back has been a career ender. The list of guys who have had that injury and never been the same, it's absurdly long.
I think the scary thing to me was, because there was a lot of anticipation and that it was almost built and set up for, you may have gotten a steal in the fourth round, and at a certain point, Pierce is going to get some carries. But then when you started hearing and seeing and having people talk about the fact that the majority of the carries in training camp have all gone to Pierce, you start thinking to yourself, well, wait a minute, what do we not know that they know? And then to see
it's running back.
But then when you see what happened in the first preseason game too, to me it seems like he might be the odd man out and Pierce might be the go-to guy from week one.
Joel, I have a working belief that at any given time there are 300 humans who could be elite NFL running backs.
Oh, boy.
I know that it sounds absurd, but my belief is that the running back is largely dependent on a coach who knows how to scheme a running game, a good offensive line, and a passing game to set up the running game. I think if you have those three things, there are 300 people in the world at any given time who could be an elite NFL running back. So I don't
That's how the mighty have fallen. So instead of taking running backs in the top 10 of the draft from now on, you could just have any 300 people and
I would
insert running back here?
Almost never take a running back before the fourth round.
Fourth?
There are some guys who I'd consider in the third, but for the most part, I'm not touching running
backs. Najee Harris is on line one.
I mean, Pittsburgh is... James Conner was great there. Le'Veon Bell was great there before leaving and sucking after that. I think the amount of times we watch elite running backs fall off a cliff and the guy right behind them is a stud, it happens all the time. Why is Tony Pollard so damn good? Is it possibly that Dallas is just good at running the football?
If you look at it, too, there's a ton of examples to back up your theory in how the whole... how the running back is looked at. When you think about what happened in Denver a year ago, what you think about the fact that in Jacksonville, before they had a quarterback, they already had developed young running backs. When you look at some of these different examples of these teams that have done exactly what you said, Green Bay was a perfect example a couple years ago, and they did it again with A.J. Dillon, but they took Jones in like the fourth and fifth rounds. They became their number one and their number two. Williams, when he came a free agent, went to a crappy team called the Lions, and Jones got his money. So then they drafted A.J. Dillon to replace Williams, and A.J. Dillon now is a sleeper pick in fantasy drafts because he gets carries, and he is a stud. And you're like, yeah, maybe there's a lot that leads itself to your philosophy.
People hate my opinion on this. We already got a text on that on the text line. But I just think the amount of times we watch an elite running back enter the end of his career where he's no longer very good, and what do you know? There's an elite running back right behind him. It seems like no one ever moves on from an elite running back and can't run the football. It is so rare. But anyways, the reason I brought that up in the first place is as I was looking for things to talk about today, I just, trying to get a feel of how Texans fans are feeling. And I'm scrolling Texans Reddit, and the only thing they're talking about is Dameon Pierce. I think Dameon Pierce might be the biggest source of Kool-Aid on the Texans right now. And I think that's fair. I am curious. And I'll let you go both ways on this. I'll let you give me something that you're not buying. But Joel, if you got to have one nice glass of Texans Kool-Aid, what is it on?
Petrie. Yeah, mine's not Pierce. It's Petrie. It's another P word. Petrie, to me, as much as we saw potential when he was drafted, when we thought, hey, they might have got something here, and the guy likes to hit, and the guy is aggressive, but he can also cover. He's athletic. He's got good hip turn. But the fact that if you take away anything from that preseason game, and again, to your running back philosophy and theories, look, I mean, Pierce didn't touch the ball all that much. Sure, he showed you what you needed to see. But the fact that for a full game, whenever he was in the ball game, when you look at what Petrie did, there's no reason to believe that he's not going to start from week one and be a mainstay on that defense for the next 3, 5, 7 years. Because unless, obviously, knock on wood, he avoids injury. But this guy gets it, and he's physical, and he's athletic.
He's tiny. I didn't realize how small he was for a safety.
He brings the wood for a guy his size.
Sometimes those guys can, and yeah, he looked really good in that game. I think a pair of rookies whose last name starts with P is a good answer. Maybe this is wrong on me. I didn't even think about Petrie. I think maybe I'm just maybe I'm the casual who's too focused on the attractive positions, right? Damian Pierce caught my attention. My Kool-Aid, the guy that or storyline or whatever you want to take it to, that I am drinking the Kool-Aid on is Nico Collins. Nico Collins, and maybe it's because I watched him in college too, but Nico Collins is a guy who I think disappointed a little bit last year, but he wasn't terrible.
Right.
Especially knowing what you worked with as a whole on the offense. He's a guy who's turned heads at training camp. He didn't do anything in preseason game one. But Nico Collins as you talked about with Petrie, he's kind of he's got the athletic build that you want. Size and speed combo, good red zone threat. And when you look at the guys that he played with at Michigan and was able to have the level of success he was, like John O'Korn and Shea Patterson were the guys throwing him passes. And that was good enough to go in the third round. I looked it up, by the way. Lance Zierlein had a second round grade on Nico Collins. You can find some really good receivers in the second and third round. I don't think that Nico Collins is going to be a superstar.
Don't discount. He looks like a physical specimen.
I mean, he does.
In great shape.
I don't know. I don't know if you're being serious.
That was a storyline for two players already in training camp. That's how worthless storylines are in training camp.
Nico Collins is a physical dude. And I think that matters a little bit at receiver.
You know who else was that I keep bringing up? Joey Dorsey. You know what he did? Nothing.
No, yeah, it doesn't guarantee anything. I just think that, like, he showed production on the college level. He had the athletic ability. And I thought last year he was okay. And I think, look,
I agree with that.
I think your goal for Nico Collins is solid wide receiver two. And that's the Kool-Aid I'm drinking. I think you're going to feel pretty good about your wide receiver too. Now, you're going to eventually need to find a one when Cooks moves on, which, he's, 28, 29 years old?
Yeah, that was my thinking. As long as Cooks is on the roster, he's your two. But I'm sure they would hope that he could compete to be a one, maybe. I mean, that would be the ceiling, right? And you got your slot to be your three, unfortunately, going through some health issues. But Mechie is the guy that you drafted to be your slot receiver of the future, right?
I mean, I think a cancer diagnosis complicates things, right? But that's the hope.
I'm assuming that from what I've heard with the reports that this is a beatable form of cancer and that in a year's time that there's no reason to believe that he can't be back out there. Assuming, take cancer out of the picture, I believe that when they made the draft pick, they assumed that Collins and Mechie are long-term stalwarts in their receiver room.
I think that's probably fair. And they might be leaning on Nico to be a future one. I'm not necessarily sure I'm willing to go that far yet.
I'm not.
Well, I know, but this is the Kool-Aid segment.
Right.
I want you to be optimistic. And that's somewhere I think I can be optimistic. 713-780-3776. What's the Kool-Aid you're drinking?
I'm going to tell you the Kool-Aid that I'm not drinking that everybody's drinking is based on preseason game one. Their front seven is going to be devastating. Their front seven is rookies and misfits of other teams that was playing the majority of the big plays that people are talking about. In last week's game, I'm not losing my mind on the Texans front seven.
Do you feel like there was a lot of hype there?
Because
I don't.
I do.
I mean, Grenard, no doubt, is like, if you were to make a list.
But we're not even talking about Grenard. We're talking about the guy from the Rams, the Ogbo. Everybody's talking about him. But all the reports
I heard. They're not talking about him because they can't say his name.
No, we're not talking about him. Every report I heard leading up to the first game against the Saints was, this guy hasn't really done anything in training camp. And then all of a sudden, because of the game he had on Saturday night, people are like, whoa, you see him? You see the big kid from Notre Dame? You see the 5 sacks? His front seven's doing some things. Are they, though? They got Ian Book. Who cares?
Yeah, I think the Kool-Aid on the defense is the secondary. That's
it
where you went and
but
spent resources. Yeah, but a lot of times the secondary is...
Because I was just going to say, the hype after game one was the front seven. In week one, the hype of the best aspect of your defense should justifiably be your secondary.
What is the Kool-Aid? I want to give you, you know, Mr. Embrace the Suck, a chance to do that in this moment. Oh, I guess you kind of told me. Is that it? The Kool-Aid you don't
yeah,
want
I'm
at all?
Not drinking Kool-Aid on the front seven.
I to be honest, I didn't think people were. I didn't think, maybe in the preseason game, but as a whole, I didn't think people were that excited
about
it.
Because you talk about Grenard. You talk about some of the guys. Everybody's hoping that there's some kind of resemblance of a good player in Blacklock. I mean.
Hoping,
right.
But I think that's all it is. I think it's wishful thinking.
The fact that we had James Palmer call Christian Kirksey a star. I mean, I think there's a little overhype on the front seven.
The Kool-Aid that I'm out on is the Lovie Love. And,
really?
Yeah. And I think there are people who believe that Lovie Smith. I think sometimes, especially in football, but in all sports, people look at coaches who have had, you know, the highest level of success. And I know he didn't win a Super Bowl, but he went to one. I think people look at that, especially with the quarterback he had, and they'll never let it go. Lovie's a guy I want to root for. Like, it's not just one of those things where you go, I criticize Dusty, but I hope he does well because he coaches my team. It's not even that. Like, I like Lovie. In fact, when he was fired by the Bears back in, I want to say 2013, 14-ish, I wanted the Lions to consider him. They had an opening. He's a guy I like. I just don't think that the league is the same. Like, Lovie Smith hasn't had a winning record, college or pro, since, like, 2011.
And we can talk about it on the other side. I think a lot depends on who you're replacing. Like, if you were with the Bears, you were supposed to replace him with someone better when he left. So there was a lot of love for Lovie on the way out the door. The fact that Lovie is replacing David Culley lends a lot of positivity and like anticipation towards Lovie, because it couldn't get any worse, and he's got NFL experience to where he should be better.
I will enjoy rooting for Lovie Smith. I hope it works out. I think the ceiling is going to be limited with Lovie Smith. I think the memory of what he did in Chicago is a lot better than what he actually did. They went to a Super Bowl with Rex Grossman,
yeah,
which is obviously crazy.
Is an accomplishment.
But he spent 9 years in Chicago and won 2 playoff games. Outside of that year, he won like 8 other years. He won 2 playoff games.
Okay, but you know,
and
what?
That's the highlight of Lovie Smith's career.
But he won with Rex Grossman.
It's a different league.
Lovie
Smith's not winning with Rex Grossman today.
No, but it's like both of the missteps of the Schlepp teams in my division. You know, Lovie Smith doing that, and you guys getting rid of a very good and better than serviceable Jim Caldwell to try and do better, only so that you could absolutely crap the bed bigger.
If you guys want to get into this, we can get into it a little bit more on the other side. What's the one storyline you're drinking the Kool-Aid on? What's the one you're not? 713-780-3776, 713-780-3776. Also, one thing that I think is appealing for people who are embracing the suck, you're listening to the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Joel, did you steal a coffee maker recently?
No.
Did you see this email?
No.
Apparently, we got an email to the whole office.
What?
With the subject line, misplaced coffee machine, please read.
At least they didn't call anybody a thief.
No,
misplaced.
That's why I asked if there might have been a thief. We've gone through some changes in the office recently, the way things are laid out here, and I guess we've lost a coffee machine. I don't know.
Oh, it's a fancy one, too.
It just caught my attention, the headline, misplaced coffee machine. I was like,
if it's just that one that has that little mini pot of coffee every day, big deal. But then when I looked at the picture, which it's very serious when someone actually tags it with a picture, when it looks like that's one of those foo-foo grinder cup coffee machines. Obviously, it's one of our salespeople, so it has to be foo-foo.
I do hope we find it.
It's a cappuccino machine, too.
Cappuccino machine. Well, I hope we can find it.
That means you have to drink with the pinky in the air?
I don't know that I've ever had a cappuccino.
I just like the fact that Esme's so sweet that she doesn't call anybody a thief and ask if anybody that took it, give it back. If it was misplaced, could you place it correctly?
713-780-3776. What's the Kool-Aid you're drinking on the Texans this season? What's the Kool-Aid you're out on? Some texts we got in, 8894. The Kool-Aid I'm drinking is 100% the defensive backs. That's kind of how I feel. People have been looking at the defense. Maybe they overreacted a little bit off of one preseason game about the defensive line, but I don't think that that's an overwhelming view of the Texans' defense, at least not currently.
Yeah, no, I agree. Look, I believe that whatever everybody's perception was after of the defense after the first preseason game, when we get into regular season games, the strength of the defense, and I know everybody's looking at John Grenard, to me, the overwhelming strength of the defense is the secondary.
Lamont with some great Kool-Aid he's drinking. Hoping the Titans and Colts will not be good. I guess Lamont. I don't actually know where Lamont stands on this.
Sounds like he's not embracing the suck.
He wants the backdoor the playoffs.
Backdoor success.
You know what? I think you can live with it. I know you hate it.
I'm not living with it. No.
And we can get into it a little bit later too with the Browns. We will get to that.
Yeah.
The Browns are the reason. The Browns are something that I think is appealing for people who are embracing the suck, and I think maybe you should be watching them. But it's the reason. Backdooring into the playoffs might not be as harmful. What else?
Backdooring the doo-doo Browns?
Oh. Well, I don't know about that one.
Oh. That's two live crew.
And then preseason Kool-Aid is always watered down. I don't know if I read that one already. I think that is fair.
That was very good. Didn't I flag one?
Yeah, you flagged one that was not related at all to this topic.
Oh, okay.
I mean, we can mention it. People who don't bring gifts to weddings are the absolute worst. Makes me rethink my friendship.
Completely agree. Could not agree more.
I didn't know those people existed.
Oh, my God. Do they exist? They exist in droves. I can't tell you how many of my quote-unquote close friends that I have done like stuff for my entire life, and they had the time of their life at my wedding.
I mean, cash is acceptable, right? You don't need an actual.
Sure.
Okay,
it's actually
sure.
Preferred, because then my wife doesn't get it in a card that I know I'm never going to see again.
Yeah, I honestly, I mean, I guess you just have to assume that the worst kind of people always exist everywhere. I could not imagine.
Like,
going
I would
to a
never in a million years consider going to a friend's wedding and not giving them a gift.
I've given gifts, not so much now, but especially like in my first couple of years in radio, where I mean, I was just,
well, if you're, I mean,
just
look,
above the poverty
line, means. Yeah.
Where my gifts were certainly lackluster, but I've never gone and not given anything.
If you guys want to tweet Daryl Morey and Tad Brown, go ahead.
I am curious with the Browns' first round pick this year, if you will prioritize watching Browns games. And I'm not talking about prioritizing watching them over the Texans, or if there's other teams, you know, that you root for, the Packers,
so,
for you. The Cowboys too, for reasons.
Well, yeah, I mean, the specifics of which game I'm going to watch, we all know that. The specifics of I'm going to scoreboard watch. So I would kind of say the question a little differently, to where I'm not going to watch Browns games in their entirety, but I'm going to closely watch the scoreboard, because there's a vested interest in the fact that the future of the Houston Texans, in part, can be a lot better, a lot quicker, based on the level of, or the lack of success of the Browns.
I followed three different teams last year. I followed, obviously, the Lions as my team, the Texans. Rams because of Stafford, Texans because I was here.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that having two other teams to care about makes it easier to embrace the suck in your own team.
Okay.
Like, I don't know if this will be the case for you or not, Joel, but if you're a Texans fan who thinks that the Texans are better off sucking, I think making sure you have, like you said, scoreboard watch, but I think a lot of us are watching, you know, two games or flipping channels.
I'm watching a ton of games, but I'm not going to watch a Browns game like as one of those two games, because, you know, obviously everybody knows I'm watching Packers and Texans.
Sure.
So if they're not playing at the same time, then the Red Zone channel, to me, is allowing me to keep track of the whole league, and I will pay specific attention to what the Browns are doing.
I did look. There are six times that they play different time slots this year, as well as two to-be-determined time slots. I think I would – I mean, I have too many teams to follow as it is, so I don't know if I'll be adding a fourth to my list.
That's
a
lot.
But I think otherwise I would be adding the Browns, and that's what I'm curious. Like, is watching the Browns – something that you'll be doing, because now you get to root for.
So if you're a Texans fan and you're not like us, transplants that have lived and breathed and bleed for our hometown team, if you're a Texans fan looking for that second team, it's logical for it to be the Browns, because there is a vested interest and there is a specific reason why you can actually get a payoff from watching that team.
The only thing with watching the Browns is if Watson is out for the year, which we don't know for sure yet, but I think that's the way everyone's leaning.
See,
you're going to be watching two bad football teams a lot.
You are, but one of them you're going to get great joy out of,
right,
much as the other one might provide pain.
Well, and I got to tell you, I know their season win total is like 8.5 right now. they start the season on a really favorable schedule, yeah, but if they struggle
their first
in the
six games, five of them, no matter who's the quarterback, they got a legit chance to win, but they should be 3-2.
But if they see, I you and Jeremy are both higher on them as a team without Deshaun Watson than I am. If they struggle at all out the gate, I think the Browns could give you a shot at a top.
Don't sleep on Jimmy G still being a Brown. Josh Rosen cannot be
Did
the only
you
other.
Did you see the report on him yesterday?
No.
There was a report that after he got his contract extension,
oh, I saw that.
He just stopped answering phone calls in the offseason.
He completely ghosted them for like a month.
I don't think Jimmy G is going anywhere this year. I think it's Jacoby Brissett. And if they get out of the first couple weeks,
Josh Rosen can't be your only other option.
You get to week five, and it's Chargers, Patriots, Ravens, Bengals, Dolphins, who, you know, we don't know what they're going to be, but I think the expectations are higher. Bills, Buccaneers. If they struggle out the gate, you could be watching Browns games with at least the possibility of flirting with the top five.
See, but Brendan, that's the thing. I mean, we're going to be watching for them, hoping that they're terrible. The Browns themselves can't leave Josh Rosen as the only other option to Jacoby Brissett. If indeed what happens is what we're expecting to happen and Deshaun gets 10, 12 to a possible full season suspension, there's no way they can leave it in the hands of just Brissett and then Josh Rosen. They have to have an alternative plan because the roster's too good around them. That's why I think Jimmy G's sleeper team is the Browns, because the Niners said he's not in the quarterback room. He's throwing on the side. He's Deshaun-ing without all the cases against him just until they find a home for him. At a certain point, if they just do low bargain basement, I got to get him out of Niners colors, and the Browns say, we have the room to take him, and it gives us maybe a better option or another option if Deshaun's going to be out, I think they could make that move.
I think if he ends up in Cleveland, it's because he gets cut.
Well, that's also
I don't know that they're in, and yeah, I think that is a possibility. I don't think they're investing draft capital in a one-year backup quarterback when the reality is Brissett, he's obviously doesn't have the proven success that Jimmy G has had, but like, I think they're both similar tier players. Both of them are guys who are between bottom of the league starters and high-end backups.
But you can't discount what Jimmy G did a year ago.
I can't.
I mean, he took him to the NFC Championship game.
I think took them is an unfair way to describe
it.
Okay,
he quarterbacked the team that went to the NFC Championship game. Did he have a defense and some weapons around him? Sure. But so do the Browns.
I think he had the best coach in football. I think he had...
best coach in football. I'm not going that far.
Obviously, Belichick would be the argument. I think at worst, he's the second best coach in football.
I think Sean McVay is also in the discussion.
I'd put McVay third, I think. But I think he had the best coach in football. He had a good defense. He had... you know what? I talked about how I don't think running backs matter, and I believe that. The Shanahans, not just Kyle. Mike was the same way. The Shanahans have the cheat code to running the ball in the NFL. I could rush for 1,000 yards on the 49ers.
That zone scheme blocking that the Broncos used forever and a day with undersized linemen worked.
I just don't think – I'm not saying it's not an upgrade. I don't think the upgrade from Brissett to Jimmy G is enough.
The best coach in the NFL.
Obviously, it's really hard to argue that over Bill Belichick.
But think about this. If you're the Browns, and I said this over and over again, last year I thought that they had the best roster in the NFL aside from quarterback. So if you believe that you still have a roster worthy of a playoff spot, and after three or four games, whether he gets hurt or he just completely is terrible, the fact that you know that you can still salvage the season and you know Deshaun ain't coming back anytime soon, the fact that Jimmy G could be studying for the first couple weeks to learn the offense – and that he could do exactly what he did for the Niners. He has a running game. He has receivers that are similar to the guys that Jimmy G had to throw to in Frisco. He has a defense that with Myles Garrett and the guys that they have on defense and Ward in the secondary, that if they get the right guy to do exactly what he did in San Francisco, they could win.
Who are your favorite NFL bounce-back candidates? I have a couple. We'll get to that on the other side. This is the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We'll get back into the Astros at 2 o'clock. ESPN had an article today that I was locked out of, but it did get me thinking. Yeah. By the way, did you guys see ESPN Plus is increasing their pricing to $9.99 a month?
I'm used to you in the other room where you always turn on my mic. That's crazy. The Athletic is $1 a month.
Well, that's the Athletic does all sorts of promo pricing. I'm not $9.99 a month felt crazy for an ESPN.
Yeah, that seems to be a little bit high.
But they did have an article on the best NFL bounce back candidates this year, and I wanted to talk some national level NFL and get into some of our favorites because there's a couple guys. Obviously, being a fantasy guy, like. That's one of the big things you're looking at, guys you think who are underpriced because they weren't good enough last year. And that's where a lot of my names come from. But if you want to get involved in the conversation, 713-780-3776, who are your favorite NFL bounce back candidates? I'm going to start with the guy who I've mentioned it on this show before, Allen Robinson.
Yeah, I mean, of course you're going to go to a guy in those jerseys that look like they got peed on because your favorite quarterback is there. But I don't disagree that if he's ever going to be that guy again, this is the perfect.
But he was that guy until last year. It's not like he's disappeared for a couple.
He was
years.
That guy in Chicago when the everything was upside down for a couple of years. It's not really saying much when you say I was the wide receiver one for the Bears.
Oh, I see. I think you're looking at it backwards. I think Allen Robinson was a stud in Jacksonville with Blake Bortles. He was a stud in Chicago with Mitch Trubisky.
Stud?
Oh yeah.
We both saw them play at least a minimum of twice
a
year.
I'm really surprised that you didn't think Allen Robinson was a stud. I think Allen Robinson has been
top 15 receiver most of his career. I have a hard time calling a guy a stud when you know that no matter how good he is, they can't get him the ball enough to be a difference maker to where I'd call him a stud.
That's because his quarterback's
a stud. A stud is a guy that either keeps you in a game or could win a game for you with big plays. And there wasn't anybody to get him the ball to give him the ability
exactly.
to do that.
That's the point I'm making. Allen Robinson has been what he's been his entire career. With garbage cans at quarterback.
Your guy's got a WD-40 elbow now. Who knows if he can get him the ball?
And that's a fair concern. But, I mean, Allen Robinson was putting up impressive numbers every year, year in and year out, with absolute garbage quarterbacks.
Look, if you're going to lose OBJ, and you know that you're not going to get double teamed because you got Cooper Kupp, then the chances are pretty good that he's going to have a good year. I get that.
And when I think you point to Cooper Kupp having his best career year. Allen Robinson's starting, he's getting up there in age a little bit. I think he might be 29 now. I don't know that he's got a long career ahead of him. The other thing is L.A. has been relatively successful at picking out wide receivers. Like Cooper Kupp was a small school guy, I think third-round guy. Might even be later than that. Robert Woods. Like, who was Robert Woods when they signed him from Buffalo?
True.
People thought Odell Beckham was washed. Obviously, I shouldn't say lots of teams. No one wanted to take on his contract. But you thought somebody would give a shot to Odell Beckham, but there was a lot of conversation about him being washed. For the most part, when the Rams have invested in wide receiver, they've been right. And Allen Robinson's a guy who I think could – have a career year at 29. I think that's in play.
Okay. I mean, look, that's fair. I think that, again, there's a lot of guys that I think the one sleeper for me, I'll start with this. Sleeper veteran player that otherwise, and again, it references the team we just got done talking about with the Bears. I think Khalil Mack in a Chargers uniform could be a resurrection. I think because you got Bosa, you have so many guys on James, you have so many different impactful players on that Chargers defense. And I don't believe he was motivated at all in Chicago. I think their whole defense was basically like, no matter what we do, we're not going to win because our offense sucks. That I think that if he gets in L.A. with the Chargers and he knows he's got an offense that can do some things, but more so, he looks around him on defense and goes, I got some dogs. I got some guys that can play. I think Khalil Mack could have a resurrection type year.
Have you seen the prices on Chargers to win the Super Bowl?
No.
They're like the fifth or sixth highest odds to win the Super Bowl, which is crazy.
That's
for a team
much.
That didn't make the
in
playoffs
that division,
last year.
In that division,
and it's because
too.
They went out and spent so much on defense. I it's funny. We both picked former Bears who found new destinations.
Well, because, look, your other options are you got all these guys coming off of injuries, and depending on their – like Chase Young. I can see Chase Young, but I don't think Chase Young is far enough removed from like his injury or anything else. I don't think he's from the number one overall pick. The dude has done nothing but excel, and then the knee injury. That doesn't mean he's not going to pick up where he left off. He's young. He's going to recover quicker. I think he's going to be just fine. So I wouldn't put him on that list. Now, if you want to put guys like Michael Thomas on that list, some people have Derrick Henry on that list. I don't think that's fair because Derrick Henry was a freaking, one-man wrecking crew until he got hurt, and he even got back in the season. I don't think it's fair to have him on the list. But like a Michael Thomas, can he? I mean, Alvin Kamara or Jameis Winston? I mean, Jameis, I understand. But, like, Alvin Kamara, it was just because the team sucked. I don't think it was so much that he was that awful.
There are two quarterbacks that I'm super interested in.
Okay.
I don't know that I want to say I expect them to, but I really want to see, like, I'm excited to watch both, well, if he gets the chance, Mitch Trubisky and Marcus Mariota play quarterback.
Well, I'll tell you what, when we talk about first preseason game, losing your mind, there's a whole lot of people in Pittsburgh that lost their mind on Kenny Pickett. And so there's almost like the unwritten decision that's already been made that he'll start week one. And I think Trubisky will start week one, but I think, boy, it's going to be a week-to-week situation.
Trubisky at least showed us the ability to be a really good quarterback for 1 year in Chicago. We haven't really seen that out of Mariota.
You said really good.
What was that?
You said really good?
I mean, he was probably a top 10 quarterback for 1 year.
Oh, stop it. He's good. I mean, I don't know.
No, see, I don't think he is good. I think he had a single good season.
I said that was meaning that he was good that year. I don't think he was really good, and I don't think he's ever going to be top 10 or really, really good. But I think that, again, we're looking at two guys to see what they learned. If Jameis learned some things, and we didn't see him enough till he got hurt, but if he learned some things kind of getting tutelage from Sean Payton and Drew Brees, that maybe he could do it. And I think from Trubisky's standpoint, being with Daboll, being with, you know, Allen, being with the guys in Buffalo, did he learn something where he could actually be a viable starter in this league? We'll see. I'll give them both the benefit of the doubt.
See, I'm not even going that far. I'm just interested in them. I think Trubisky had a really good year in Chicago.
I don't think Trubisky's going to start.
Yeah, I think that's possible. And then the other one, Mariota, who has never really flashed in the NFL, but there were a lot of people who thought he looked better in the limited opportunities.
I saw signs in Vegas where I said, that guy deserves a second chance.
Well, and I really liked him coming out of college. I don't know that I've ever personally been more wrong about a player than I was about Mariota coming out of college.
I got a signed Oregon Mariota Heisman helmet. I need him to play well for a couple of years just to have
value
to that.
Could be worth something if he was good, but he's got to be pushing 30 at this point.
Is he? See, the thing is the one thing that I really saw signs that kind of intrigued me last year was on third downs, his ability to run the ball. The fact that he shows that his legs are supercharged, and the fact that in today's game, running and run pass options play well.
Yeah, you would think. That's the thing. I thought he was going to fit the modern NFL a lot better than he did.
He also doesn't have a team around him, though.
So, well, it will depend. I don't think he'll have a good team around him.
He's got a good young tight end. He's got some young receivers.
But there's been stud young receivers every year for the last 2 or 3 years. I'm not saying Drake London will be that.
Well, he's hurt.
But it could be. It could be interesting. 713-780-3776. Who are some bounce back candidates that you like this year? Let's go out to Justin. Justin, who are some bounce back players you like this year?
Hey, guys. Congrats on the 1 year. I got a couple of them. They're definitely fantasy focused. But Juju Smith-Schuster, I think, is going to have a big year. Obviously, the QB upgrade helps a ton. And then Darren Waller, he was riddled with injuries last year. I could see him having a real big year. So, thanks, guys.
Juju Smith-Schuster is somebody who I had. Actually, he's the last player I had on my list.
You think about it, the scenario paints itself very well for him. If you lose Tyreek Hill, if you're going to an Andy Reid offense, and you add a veteran receiver that still has plenty of ability, I could see that.
I think people just, like, forgot about this dude. Like, honestly...
Juju?
I do.
Yeah.
I think there's been conversations.
Well, they were
steered
clear with milk cartons. Or milk crates. Once he did the milk crate challenge, it was all over.
I think there's been some conversation this year about a pair of, and I'm guilty of this, a pair of places where we're going to get to see what the quarterbacks look like without their, you know, star toy wide receiver in Green Bay without Davante Adams and in Kansas City without Tyreek Hill. But Kansas City still has Travis Kelce, and they went out and added Juju Smith-Schuster, who 2 years ago we might have talked about, you know.
He was a stud.
He was.
Yeah.
And we don't talk about him that way anymore. Like, if he isn't a stud in Kansas City, then I'm very confused about what was going on in Pittsburgh. Because he was so good for a minute. Like, what happened?
And it wasn't like he had, like, some career-changing injuries or anything like that. He was dinged up a little bit. But there's no reason to believe that he can't have a breakout when, like you said, you know, like the caller said, you've got a better quarterback at a different point in their career. You've got an offensive-minded coach that's going to make sure that he puts you in the right position to get the ball. The scenario's there where he should have a great year. I don't see any issues with that at all. I think that's a legit possibility that everybody that you should be excited about. I don't know if you guys saw this or not. I retweeted it, but someone put out there when we were talking about Juju Smith-Schuster. But Chase Claypool, and nothing annoyed me more than the fact that he over-celebrated every play he made it a year ago. And someone found some picture of some dude or some video of some guy dancing around doing this crazy dance, and it says every time Chase Claypool catches the ball in his own territory on 3rd and 21 and gains 4 yards, and it's this dude during this like 30-second celebration. I was like, Yes, and that should change because that's annoying.
713-780-3776. Who are your favorite NFL bounce back candidates? Again, we'll get into the Astros again at 2 o'clock. I think destination weddings are annoying. The Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Answer that.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I've been having to make plans for a wedding coming up in October in Atlanta. It's a two-day wedding, by the way. Festivities Friday and Saturday.
Ooh.
And
you're not in it.
I'm not in it.
If you're not in it and it's a two-day wedding, that's a problem. And you have to pick up the tab on hotel and flight.
Yep,
that's that's a problem.
It's a two-day wedding in a city that I am not from, nor are either members being married. I think one of them lived there for a year. And by the way, I asked how important the first day was. I was like, can I skip out on that?
Yeah.
And he was like, well, you can do whatever you want, but we would really like you to be there. And this is a pretty close friend.
So then why didn't they put you in the wedding? I mean, depending on who this person is, if they really wanted you to be there that badly, then maybe you should have had a bigger position in the wedding.
So I'd be honest, I don't know.
You don't know the person.
Well, I don't know the person. it's an Indian wedding. I've never been to an Indian wedding before.
Yeah, I can't speak on that.
I have no idea if like wedding. It might be. I don't know.
You sure it's not a guardian wedding?
No.
Okay, I'm just checking.
No,
okay.
Both of them are from
I'm
India.
I'm just checking. I didn't know if they were from Cleveland. All right.
Both of them are from India. So I don't know if, like, the party is not a thing or maybe it's different. I have no idea.
Oh, wait a minute. I think I do have some knowledge on this, though, because I believe that my wife has been invited to weddings before, that in the Indian culture or when there's a marriage, that a lot of times it's a double ceremony. It's one, the Indian culture wedding, and one more of a traditional wedding. I believe that some of the weddings that my wife had been invited to that involved at least one person of Indian that practices Indian culture in terms of the way they celebrate weddings. I believe it's a two-day process because I think there's two different ceremonies.
I
think. People can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that that was the case as it was explained to me.
Of this whole process, the problem that I have the most is not the two-day part of it. It's the Atlanta part of it.
That's tough.
I don't – like, also, by the way, if you're going to do a destination wedding, do a destination. Why are we doing Atlanta?
Yeah, that's a problem too. Like, one of my really good friends has been going to a couple weddings this summer, and he's like, the one that really pisses me off the most is – it's like people saying they want to save money without saving money. They're doing it over Labor Day weekend to save money. Then they're doing it.
I got a wedding Labor Day weekend too, by the way. Maybe I'm just annoyed by all the weddings I got to deal with.
Yeah, that could be possibly it. But then, because they all add up, right? But these people are doing it on Labor Day weekend, but the ceremony's on Labor Day, which means, and it's a destination wedding, which means you have to pay for the extended weekend. It is a holiday weekend. Because it's on Labor Day and it's a destination wedding, the chances are you have to take an extra day of vacation so that you can't travel back until the following day.
I'm actually going to take
it. It is a multifaceted debacle.
I'm going to take, Thursday, Friday. I think I'm taking Thursday and Friday because it was way cheaper to fly Wednesday night. I got to be honest with you. I kind of expected to get pushback here. You know, you're not a destination wedding fan either?
I'm not at all. And I had a bad experience. Like, so the thing is when you do destination weddings, as I found out, not from my own experiences, but from others, that I had a friend of mine get married, do the destination wedding, and in doing the destination wedding, there's a minimum for how many people that you sign up for the destination. So at a certain point, the people that were getting married are like, we're not filling all these rooms. We're not getting enough people that are going to be there. And they actually came to me and said, hey, do you think so-and-so or some of our other friends might be interested in going? So one of my buddies and his girlfriend at the time and her sister were like, yeah, we'll go. That'd be great because we were looking for a chance to get away anyway. It was in Mexico. So they went, right? And so then because they felt honored that they were included and my buddy actually was the one that asked them and whatever like that. So they go. So they're like, well, we don't want to be disrespectful. So now when we find out that there's a reception or a a pre-wedding party on the Friday night, and then there's the ceremony on the beach, and then there's the pre-ceremony reception at a different location, right? They're like, well, we don't want to be rude, so we're going to make sure that we support them no matter how much we want to also see the sights and do the things. And all of a sudden, I get a tap on the shoulder during the wedding and going, what are they doing here? And I'm like, why are you asking me? And they're like, can you get them to leave? I'm like, so you wanted them to go, so you met the quota. And now you want me to be the bad guy and say, but you can't be, they don't want you here for the actual ceremony and event?
That's wild.
And I took so much heat for it that I like left early. The next day I was like, everyone looked at me like, oh, you're the guy that brought the guy that brought the guy. And I'm like, are you kidding? I was so livid. And everybody was asking me to like explain myself when I did when I was doing everything I was asked to do. I was like, I'm out. I can't do this.
Yeah, my situation's nothing like that. I mean, I don't got to bring any extra people. I'm going by myself.
Right, but I'm sure as a destination wedding, they probably faced quotas of how many people are coming.
On the text line, if I was you, I would get COVID-19 ASAP.
Not ASAP. I'd get closer to
gotta
the
wait.
Date. Yeah, you got to wait a little bit. Yeah.
I just, honestly, I expect a pushback here. I am curious if other people agree with me. Are destination weddings annoying? 713-780-3776. Joel, I'm curious where you're going to be on this, but after yesterday and after the weekend, I found myself thinking that the most important part of a healthy Lance McCullers has nothing to do with Lance McCullers or the starting pitching rotation.
How do you figure that?
I think the most important thing about a healthy Lance McCullers is the absolute weapon you add to the bullpen in Javier. And I know yesterday, like you and Jeremy were discussing what the rotation looks like if you feel good about Lance McCullers. And that still like has to happen. We still have to see more from him. And you both leaned towards putting Javier in the pen but thought it was maybe a little bit tougher. I don't think it's tough. Javier has shown not just the ability to be good, but the ability to be like locked down in key moments in postseasons.
So what I've always said is you got a guy that's been there and done that before, because we know that there are starters that don't want to or don't know how to go to the bullpen and prepare themselves and be ready and recover like you need to when you go into a relief pitcher role as opposed to a starter. But I think that after what you saw again last night, you know that Urquidy has basically kind of leapfrogged guys. Where in the past, when we were talking about it closer to the trade deadline, Urquidy was the odd man out. Urquidy was a guy that you could actually be okay with if he was being moved as part of a deal to get players that could help you more so for this stretch run. Now you look at him and go, he's in. Like Garcia has been, you know, teetering and hasn't been great. And like you said, with Javier, he's been there, done that, and he's been super effective in the playoffs, in big moments as a relief pitcher. That helps too. If McCullers proves to you and can continue to stack and rack appearances like he did against the A's, I think that as other teams are suffering, we saw the Dodgers lose Walker Buehler yesterday. We know that Carpenter was lost by the Yankees, and they're having starting pitcher issues. The Astros not only are staying healthy right now, knock on wood, They have the ability to get stronger after the deadline. They might be the only team in baseball that can do that if McCullers gives you and affords you that opportunity.
713-780-3776. What would be the biggest part of having a healthy Lance McCullers back? The way I looked at it, there were three things that came to mind. One is the top of rotation strength. If you feel like you got a healthy and reliable Lance McCullers in the playoffs, you have three aces?
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, it's close.
And you're always starting four in the playoffs.
You have three guys that either could be, were, or should be an ace on someone's staff.
And then whoever you go at four, I'm assuming it's Urquidy, but wherever you go at four in this scenario.
If Lance is three, Urquidy's four.
Wherever you go, you feel good about it.
Yeah.
And Jeremy talked yesterday about the idea of piggybacking starts. I don't like that. You can do that with Garcia.
I don't think
you're going to have...
One, there's no need to do it.
Yeah, there really isn't. Your starting rotation's too good to force it.
And I don't like it. Wherever in baseball have you seen a team trade a starting pitcher before the deadline and not gain starting pitching depth instead of losing any? I mean, that's what we're talking about with the Astros. They already had a surplus of starting pitchers. You traded Odorizzi, who arguably at the time was pitching like he deserved to stay in the rotation, And you still got stronger with the same amount of depth as in your starting pitching, to where if you move Garcia and Javier to the bullpen and it erases the ability to have to go to Seth Martinez or Abreu or guys like that, you're better.
And that's the thing. Like, don't get me wrong. All of it's good. There's a lot of positives about the idea of a healthy Lance McCullers. But whether or not you believe in it, and I don't know where you stand today. I know you had a lot of hesitation on the pen early in the season, but we're so deep at this point. I think it's the best bullpen in the ERA in the league still, with 45 games to go. You take a strong bullpen and add what I believe to be the best weapon in it, if you add Javier to it, and you got four pitchers who you...
Well, you're saying Javier's the best weapon?
I think so.
Well, I think Ryan Presley still
is. And that's fair. I don't think, like... I don't think that that's... I think it's up for debate. But even if you say it's Ryan Presley, you add Javier and you get into a situation where when fully rested, you can know that you're going to go to Presley in the ninth, but have a weapon to use in wherever the high leverage moments are. And the thing is, you're going to expect to go relatively deep into games, in low scoring games, with every single starter who goes.
And, no, I see that.
I don't think you're going to have to rely on Javier. Like, last year, you were consistently fighting to get through five. I don't think that's the scenario this year. Well, not to say it will never happen, but I don't
look
think
at
it
what
will
happened
be,
last night. You have insurance policies all over the place, right? You have extra starters that can pop in if one of those guys that we just mentioned as our playoff four falter or get hurt. But you also have options across the board to where you have options if Montero suddenly plays his way out of being one of your trusted go-to guys at the back of the bullpen. Javier could easily be your sixth inning guy. He could easily be your seventh inning guy. He could easily be your eighth inning guy. I mean, on certain teams, he might even be your closer. So the fact that you take him, and a lot of times they label him as a long relief guy, but in high leverage situations, he comes in and can be a short leverage, a short term guy too.
I think you'd be, because of the situation of the starting pitching, with the depth that you have, the strength that you have at the top of it, having Javier in the bullpen come October is going to let you use him when you need him. Like, I don't think you're going to be forced into situations where we go, we just need to get through today. Very often, I think you're going to be able to go through most of the postseason and rely on him only for big moments. And I think it puts you in a spot where...
Do you think Dusty looks at him that way? Because I don't.
That's a fair
question. I think that's one of the obstacles you're going to be up against.
Let's get into this more on the other side. Because I really do. I think that Lance McCullers' return, there's a lot of different ways to look at it and what's the best part of it. And I do want to know what's the most important part of it for you. But for me, it's getting Javier in the bullpen and knowing you're going to have him to have the ability to rely on him in the playoffs. This is the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scott's Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.